Daisy Pitt. Daisy, hello.
G'day, Jared.
Are you out of quarantine?
Yes, freedom.
What did you do? What was your first thing?
Well, I was up before sunrise and picked up very early just to get in reposition to be here with you. So now I got a proper coffee. I was bombarded with footy chat the minute I stepped into the hotel lobby. So nice. Immediately I'm feeling the great atmosphere that's building over here.
How did you... It would be a weird experience, I'm sure, across 14 days. Part of you loved it. You confessed to that last week. How you found the lack of human contact, at least physically?
Yeah, it was funny. Yesterday I did feel this little sense of anxiety building at the thought of coming back out into the real world, and that was only 2 weeks of isolation. So, I'm looking forward to it. I've heard so much about the atmosphere in and around the grand final here in Perth. And now that I'm in the city and can get amongst it, I'm looking forward to absorbing it all.
Yep. It's we sort of live vicariously through you and those who are on the ground. We're a long way removed from it. What were the reports from home around the earthquake? Did your house get a good shake back home?
I got a call immediately from Ben. We're up in northeastern Victoria, yeah. So pretty close to the epicenter in Mansfield, but our front door usually needs a pretty good hip and shoulder to open it. It's a bit stuck, and it flung open. So that was enough to measure that. I didn't need the Richter scale. I went, woo, that's a fair shake. But no, obviously the wrong person was listening to all of us talking about how bored and dull life is in Melbourne because Mother Nature took things into her own hands.
Yeah, these are pretty weird times, I can promise you that. All right, let's delve a little into the grand final. I want to pick your brain, how you're thinking about it with a long time to ponder. So let's start with the Dogs. Go on.
I'm glad we're starting with the Dogs, actually, because the little steady trickle of hate mail almost about my bias towards Melbourne has been trickling in for over the last couple of weeks. And I don't need to manufacture, I want to put this on the table, I don't need to manufacture a love for the Dogs or fairness for the Dogs, because I have a genuine admiration for the way that they play and Luke Beveridge's coaching style and the journey that they've been on this year. You would know, Jared, I am a sucker for an underdog, and with everything they've had to navigate, if this would normally be my natural leaning, if not against Melbourne. So, no, I'm really looking forward to the game. For the thing that, I've watched all the replays from round 11, round 19, and the final series in the last couple of weeks, and it really jumped out to me that in neither of the Western Bulldogs Melbourne clashes this year have Steph Martin, Josh Dunkley, and Adam Treloar played. So if I'm a Dogs fan, I'm a bit excited about that, because that there is the core of a starting midfield in any team in the competition, added back into what has already been a pretty dominant midfield. And I just think what they've been able to do in there when they've had injury concerns and having to shift magnets is they've just managed not having a dominant ruck in there. So obviously Steph Martin's missed a lot of the year and they've missed those midfielders and others at different stages, but they're still number one in the competition for their clearance differential. So they don't need things to go perfectly to be able to survive and thrive in that area in the ground. And that's a good thing to have in your arsenal heading into a grand final, because it's unlikely that they're going to have things that on their terms, particularly when they're coming up against Max Gawn. But they can survive on the back foot in there, and that's the real hallmark of their game. So, I mean, that would excite me as a Dogs fan. The other thing that I noticed in the preliminary final in particular, but throughout the final series it's been building, is that the one way to know that the Dogs are feeling confident, feeling good about themselves and the game's on their terms, is the amount of times you see little knock-ons, little underground handballs to beat the man on the mark or the defender, toe pokes out of congestion that just absolutely disrupt team defence. And that it disappeared for a couple of weeks in the back end of the season, but it's well and truly back now. I mean, you see it so much from Liberatore, McRae, Lockie Hunter is one that does it all the time. So on the weekend, if you sit down and start seeing that early for the Dogs, I think you'd be feeling pretty good.
Is there a cat and mouse aspect in your mind to the way the Bulldogs set up their forwards against particularly the intercepting defenders of Melbourne?
Yeah, that's where my eyes will turn straight away in the game because, as I said, went back and watched round 11, round 19. Round 11, Stephen May and Jake Lever dominated. I can't remember a game that Jake Lever has been better in than that round 11 game. And then, interestingly, in round 19, it was Stephen May that the Bulldogs sort of went after. So Mitch Hannon, having been towed up by their defense and the way that they like to hold a deep defender, almost like a goalkeeper, not just there to kick goals. They can also defend if the ball gets out to the open side. If there's a bit of a breach in the team defense, that deep defender, either Lever or May, usually will come forward and it's like a stopgap. So that was on top round 11. Round 19, the Bulldogs decided, we're not just going to let you have that. And Mitch Hannon went and made sure that anytime either of those players spat out the back, that they had an opponent on them. And the little crafty thing that I noticed in watching it too many times, the amount of times that I have, is that Mitch Hannon always stood behind Stephen May. So May likes to have the conviction of being able to see the game in front of him and attack the ball with conviction. But with Hannon behind him, there was just that little seed of doubt that he couldn't go with confidence just in case the Bulldogs beat the defense up the field and got it out the back to him. So it was a really interesting little tactic. And things are different again now. I mean, Shaqie's now playing forward, which he didn't play in round 11 and he played back in round 19. He's there now to maybe go head to head with a Lever as he did with a Lear. But I think that idea of making sure that they're always engaged and kept accountable is an interesting one. And it'll be interesting to see what Goodwin and Melbourne do to kind of fight back and to get that advantage back in their favour.
We're mid-conversation with Daisy Pearce, who'll be part of Channel 7's broadcast of the grand final on Saturday night. Daisy, you've measured up the cat and mouse around the Bulldogs forwards and the Demons defenders. Now, a centrepiece in all of this is going to be Aaron Norton as well. How does he fit into your picture?
He will, and I mean, he draws your eye and you think, I mean, this is a stage that he could really tear apart, but I actually think they've set things up for him to play a bit more of a selfless role. I mean, last week they targeted Shaqie 13 times going inside 50 and Norton only six, which when you see the way he was flying at the ball and all of his weapons and capabilities, your temptation is kick it to Norton. He's a game winner. But I think if you target Norton too often, suddenly he's contending with this week Lever as well because he starts dropping off a Shaqie to contend and compete with him. Whereas what they did in the preliminary final, which was clever, is Shaqie and English at times engaged with Alia and didn't really lead at the footy, stayed deep, made sure he had to stay on them and accountable, and funneled the ball through his opponent so that he couldn't drop off and go up as a second defender on somebody else. So it was a clever tactic, and Norton's opportunities came because that player was holding so deep and not leading at the footy. I think back, and when you think back to that game, people will remember some of those marks he took coming back with the flight. There was a goal he kicked because of the space held out by the player that just didn't hit up at the footy. So, whilst Norton is capable of being a game breaker, I actually think things are geared for him to play more of a selfless role that helps with the way that they want to nullify the impact that those intercepting defenders have.
Days around the ball is mesmerising in prospect with Petrarca and his cohort and Bontempelli with his. So if the game is all about midfielders, as it does seem to be these days, is how do you see things around the footy, what the Dogs like to do and how the Demons will play it?
Well, the dynamic in there is what this game really hinges on. I mean, the Bulldogs at their best are so good at they send numbers into the ball. So high half forwards, wings all get involved at stoppage. And then their ability to flick the ball around by hand and exit and be able to kick, at all of the forward 50 and with plenty of options. That's their one wood, so to speak. The thing about the Ds that means they're a great matchup for the Dogs is they've got players capable of not needing the extra support in terms of numbers to come in there and help them win it. So, if you like, Clayton Oliver's almost like the kryptonite to the way that the Bulldogs play, in that he can stand up amongst extra numbers and be clean in congestion and not need support from players coming in. So that's kind of another dynamic I'll be watching is are the Ds holding up in there, trusting their midfielders to get it done without needing to send in numbers and lose their formation outside of the stoppage, which they've been so good at. So the ability of an Oliver, Petrarca, Viney to stand up and either win the footy in there or put pressure on the Dogs so that they can't chain out is another big, big factor in this game.
You flagged Cozzy Pickett before the preliminary final. I think Zach Guthrie's got about 6 months of therapy in store for what he was subjected to. It might be hypnosis therapy, I think. He does have a way about him. We've seen it all year, and now we're about to see it in a grand final.
I think we underrate him, Jared, which sounds funny. I know we talk about how exciting he is, and we you know, you get out of your seat nearly every time you watch him live and you're calling him. But I think we underrate the role that he's playing and the impact he's had. This is a guy in his second season. He's played every single game as a small forward, which is a difficult position to play because you're so reliant on structures and what's happening around you. And a lot of the work is unrewarded. So he's a fast pressure forward whose impact internally wouldn't be measured on how many goals he's kicked. And he does that part of his role so well to help them defend and lock it in there. But he's kicked 40 goals.
Yeah.
There's not many small forwards that have kicked more. I think Charlie Cameron, Tom Papley, and Toby Green, the only small forwards who have kicked more goals than him. And he's probably the biggest one in terms of pressure factor amongst those names, like off the top of my head without knowing the numbers. So for that in his second season, to say he's an excitement machine, it sells him short.
Yep.
He's a professional and a disciplined role player. And, I mean, last week, the very first involvement in the game, and I think we spoke about this last week, is just how settled the Melbourne youngsters looked. But, I mean, at first glance, I thought, how good was that? He stepped around three Geelong defenders and hit an opponent. On second look, hit a teammate. When watching it again, what I didn't realise is early in the game, young player, maybe wanting to assert himself, he could have gone back and flown in that contest, but he stayed on the ground and just nailed his role. And that's why he got the footies, because he stayed on the ground and played that front and centre, small forward role. I just think we underrate the job that he has done and how impressive this young guy is with his discipline and professionalism.
And Ben Brown is, so there are a few additions to these two teams and stories come to great fruitions. And Ben Brown is right in that. And he set a tone early in the preliminary final. Where does he sit in your mind?
He's got a look in his eye when he's playing at the moment that I've not seen before. And I mean, it's a great story, but the story aside, the impact that he's having, there was a period there where he was finding his way back into the side, and it's felt like a weekly conversation. We had it on crunch time a couple of times where it was, you know, is he doing enough to keep his spot? He only kicked one goal, or he only took four marks, or whatever it was. And, you know, I think at different stages I've tried to capture, it's not just about what he does off his own boot. It's the impact that he has on the functioning of the rest of the forward line. And it has been a healthier forward line with him in it. And with the time that I've had, I've finally landed on something that might be able to capture that.
Yep.
And that is, so Ben Brown's played 12 games this year. And Cozzy Pickett, who I just spoke about, and Charlie Spargo, two really important small forwards in Melbourne's side, they've played every game, so 24. So it's perfect symmetry. They've played as many games with Ben Brown as they have without Ben Brown. In the 12 games they've played without him, those guys have combined for 22 goals between them. And in the 12 games with Ben Brown in the side, they've combined for 35 between the two small forwards. So in the 12 games, that's more than a goal a game better from your two small forwards. And then throw in the goals that Ben Brown's kicked himself, which is 22 in his 12 games. He's having an impact.
That's great stuff. Yes, you found the right number to support it all. Hey, actually, I'll take the news. Just go through your memory. First grand final you can remember. First grand final you went to, and just how big a moment this is in your life that you're about to go through broadcasting a grand final on the free-to-air on Channel 7. Sean from Geelong's text through. I got shivers up my spine listening to Daisy talk about Cozzy just now. So exciting, go D's. And then Steve's got the solution. Taylor Duray did a good job on Charlie Cameron. He'll shut Cozzy Pickett out. So I suspect we're talking the demons and the bulldogs side of the coin in consecutive texts there. So I'll show my age here, Daze, and you tell me where you fit in. I vividly recall watching the 1982 grand final, Carlton and Richmond, and I would have been 7. I can picture the lounge room. I can picture the television set, which was on 4 legs in those days with a big tube at the back. And I think Dad had gone to the game and remember him coming home and sort of breathlessly dissecting him with it afterwards. So 82. And the first one I went to was 84. 85. 85. Family friends, the Coopers, were mad Essendon supporters. And we sat in the lower deck of the southern stand. And the part I remember most about it, thumping big win for Essendon, was all the Essendon fans in the area were convinced that that was going to be Kevin Sheedy's last game. That was his swan song, his gift to the Bombers, and he would move on. And it was about 2.5 decades out. That's all. So that's where I can go back to. What's your first memory of watching it?
Well, I was 7 as well. It was just a bit later than when you were 7. The first one I can remember was Carlton Geelong, 95. And my memories of it are blurred, but I don't know if they're live watching it memories or the amount of times I sat down to watch the VHS tape that we had. It was one of the few videos we had floating around for most of my childhood. And I've watched it that many times. Tina Arena did the pre-match entertainment, and I was a Tina Arena fan for probably longer than I would have otherwise been, just because I always watched it. Even when I was sitting down to watch it on tape, I'd still watch the pre-match entertainment.
This is our vintage difference here. Did your VHS machine have the cartridge that popped out of the top, and did it have a remote control with an actual physical cord, or is that as technology moved on by 95?
No cord, and it was a front loader.
Very good. First one you went to?
First one I went to was 2015. So Hawthorn beat West Coast, and that was when women's footy was starting to get on the map, and I sort of went there with a bit of a job to do around the Oz Kickers. So I was there as a neutral, and yeah, it took that long to get the opportunity to go. But an amazing day. It was sunny and hot, that beautiful spring weather, and to be there and a part of the atmosphere. And that was the only one I've been to as kind of a observer since. Ever since then, it's been always as a fan, but with work duties.
Yeah. So you're Tina Arena. I'm the balloons being released. So in a time where we didn't know the environmental effect of it, the most visually pleasing part for a kid was watching the huge release of balloons as the teams ran out on the ground. It's so vivid from my childhood. So the first grand final I worked on, I did the boundary for Channel 10 2002. So Brisbane's second flag and the thriller against Collingwood. And I have this memory of interviewing Lee Matthews afterwards, and you know, the place is heaving and the sense of accomplishment. And he said something to the effect of, "Oh, come Monday, I've got to do the exit interviews and work out the trades." He goes, "So that's all there is, Lee. That's all there is, basking in all of this. And you're pragmatically moving on to the next task while still out on the ground and the players are doing the lap," and just being just a fraction disappointed that it wasn't more romantic than that. What's the first one you worked on?
On the broadcast, first one was 2017, down on the boundary as well, alongside Matthew Richardson. And I was very early days, very green in terms of the role I was playing broadcasting-wise. But I think my role was to just hold Richo's hand and make sure he was okay on the day, because I still remember him riding every single bump and every decision and everything that was going on. I reckon he would have woken up sore the next day because of all the muscle contraction and spasm that he would have had on every shift of the footy. But it was an amazing day, obviously, the breakthrough flag for the Tigers, and to be sitting there next to a Richmond champion, I'll never forget it.
And how much are you looking forward to your duties on Saturday night?
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, to call it and work at it is an honour and something I'm looking forward to. But just to watch these two teams play at the moment, I mean, this grand final is so well poised, and just the brand of footy that they both played in the preliminary final to to be there and to see it live will be a privilege. And above all else, that's what I'm looking forward to as a footy lover. And I also, I understand the privilege I've got. There are so many Melbourne and Western Bulldogs fans in Melbourne who would love to be there and experiencing it. So I won't take that for granted. And, as best I can, I'll try and do the call justice.
You will. It'll be great. Enjoy it, Daze. It's been great to share this season again with you. Finish strong and we'll see. We'll see how it all pans out.
Same to you, Jared. Have a good call.
Good on you. Daze Pearce with us every Thursday for Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. Maybe it's time you called Red Energy on 131 806.